I needed to find a way to work with 20 clients at one time with a 2-week deadline each, which is craziness, but somehow I was able to do it because I'm a beast, while still working on my personal projects, while still having time with my then boyfriend and my cats and like exercising. And that's when organization really saved my butt.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Executive Order Podcast, a show for small business owners who want to learn how to do less to accomplish more. I'm a professional organizer based in Somerville, South Carolina, and I know there isn't a one-size-fits-all for organizing within your business. In talking with my guests and chatting about our struggles, our wins, and our lessons learned, I hope that you can learn what works best to create a business and a life that's just right for you. So I am talking to Jenny Ambrose this morning. And when I first got in touch with her, I was completely dumbfounded, may I say, of just like all of the different categories. Like she just, the work that she does is within so many different compartments. And I'm just so curious to hear about how all of those come together and how she's able to serve her clients in the way that she does. Jenny, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and your business?
Yes, I will. Thank you for having me. I run Pure Fantastico. I am the founder and CEO, and I call it a design science and strategy company because, like you said, I seem to blend a lot of different components, but to me, they all stem from the same root, communication and empathy. So all of my services can pretty much break down into what do I want people to feel? How do I want them to hear that? How do I want them to experience that? And what does that look like? Whether that is a business name or a bio or a brand or a commercial or a website is completely irrelevant to the fact that I am helping someone connect with someone else. And so that is how I run my business. I've been in business since 2008, since the financial crash. And Pure Fantastico blends my background in anthropology and my background in graphic design. Because to me, they are two sides of the same coin. And I was not satisfied in either realm until I bridged them together.
So when you say empathy, are you talking specifically empathy in the way your client moves through the world or the way that your client serves their target audience?
Both. And then how I serve in the world. What am I doing with design? How am I using design to make empathy and critical thinking more on the forefront and not just the pretty superficial wonderment that design happens to reside in right now? For me, when I work with a client, when I'm serving them, I'm understanding that this is someone who really wants to do something or achieve something or grow something. So that's the first empathetic recognition. This is not someone who is a problem or a burden or stupid. They don't know, and they're coming to me to know. There is no judgment. I do not care if you don't know the right words. That is irrelevant. What matters is, can we talk about what you want to do? Can you describe to me your vision? Or can we at least get into a place where we can meet your vision together? And then who they want to serve, they're going to be empathetic about it. So I have to care about it. And I love caring about it. You know, it's a beautiful gift to be able to serve clients and watch them serve them in their own way and feel empowered with the things that we have built together. Because that's a lot of it for me is, here's how your brand works. Here's how you can communicate that. Here's how you can carry that out on social media. Here's how you can make that sustainable for you. Here's how you can do this. Because this is how I've done it. I don't have a business degree. I have a degree in anthropology and graphic design. And somehow I run an award-winning business, being my wonktacular, wonderful self, because I'm here connected to my heart and my joy. And that's how I meet people. That is exactly the space where I need them.
That's amazing. So as someone that is familiar with anthropology, but not like super familiar, what are the tenets or the aspects of anthropology that you are using in your business?
Well, definitely a recognition of culture and the ability to craft your own culture. Because when we run a business, we take it completely for granted that it's all in our control, you know, and it's like, oh, I should run my business this way because Marie Forleo, or I should take photos this way because someone on Instagram is more successful than me. And then that is a culture. That is absolutely a culture. That is a culture within a culture within a culture. And then your judgment of that, which is culture. So there's that. Then there is the way that we respond to images and information. It is its own culture. And so often we take it for granted. And we take so much of our own subjectivity for granted. And so as the designer, it's like, who cares if you want to use lime green in your insurance company? Guess what? This is what you get to do. This is the entire point. Well, won't I be taken seriously? Are you speaking from authority? Are you shoving paint on the walls, being like, I can do your taxes? No, you're not. This is not what we're worried about here. So there's a lot of clarity. There's a lot of understanding. There's a lot of deeper communication beyond just what color palette should I choose. And when you work with a business owner in that way, there is such a weight lifted off. There's such a weight lift. Then there's permission, where it's like, I didn't realize you needed permission, but there you go. Have all the permission. Do the thing. That in turn breeds a culture of excitement rather than judgment. It breeds a culture of acceptance and possibilities rather than I have to do it the way that it's always been done. I have to stick with the status quo. It's not true. It's not true. And design has a beautiful opportunity to rework this. Beautiful. I mean, pick any social problem. Throw a rock at it. Anyone. Design can really help because the way that we talk about it, the way that we display it, the way that we understand that, the way that we pair an image with that to create a new thought about whatever it is, that's the opportunity. That is the opportunity in the narrative. So on a business level, it's with business owners, visionaries. On a cultural level, it's how we deal with images and the information with those images.
I think that's amazing. And just to speak a little bit too about the fact that I think it's easy to assume that design and branding are just visual items, are just about color, are just about logos or what have you. And as you've alluded to a little bit in what you were just describing there, it's so much more. Would you say a little bit more along those lines?
Oh, with gusto. That's like saying a tree is only its leaves. And not its bark and not its roots and not its flowers and not the animals that feed off of it. Like there's an entire ecosystem in relation to just branding.
Yeah.
I would say branding is about feelings. The complete magical and tangible weirdness that are feelings. Because when you're dealing with a brand, you're sort of creating this essence that is not real. Right? But as we are humans, we have our own essence that is cultivated from our personality, from our experiences, from our likes and our dislikes and all of, but we don't think about that because that would drive us insane. We just exist in that. But when you're branding, you have to think about it. And it becomes crazy making because you're like, wait, how do I do this and still be an authentic person? You connect with the very person you are working with, which is yourself. So then, you are trying to say, this is how I feel. This is how it's going to feel when you work with me. This is the experience. This is what that looks like. You set that tone. There are very few hard and fast design rules And the rules that are there are primarily there because they've been used in ruts, not because they are any way, shape, or form that way. And just like, you know, breaking out to run your own business or breaking out to do something that hasn't been done before, there aren't going to be a lot of people that you can look to. And that's okay. What matters is you sink right back into yourself and you say, this is what it means to me. This is what it means to me. This is what it says to me. Yeah. Now, you absolutely have to throw that ball across the court and be like, you picking up what I'm throwing down? Most people will. Depending on the level of quirkiness, the level of edginess, the level of irreverence, you know, but you're not going to please everybody, even if you don't have those things. There are people who actually do not like chocolate. There are people, my husband does not like dessert. Like, he doesn't like dessert. Dessert is my favorite food group. Like, it's, that's it. And he's not a bad person. It's taken me 11 years. But he does not look at a slice of cheesecake with joy and glee in his heart like his wife does. But I'm never going to hate that cheesecake, everyone. I'm going to eat it like a hand fruit. And so you just accept that that's what you like. And it doesn't matter that someone else doesn't like it because you're doing it for you. You're doing it for the reasons that you hold, that are important to you. And that's very branding. With design, it's sort of like, so when you use an iPhone or when you use an app or when you use an ATM or when you go through a park, all of these things are designed. The experience, how someone walks through it, how someone finds their way, how can someone double tap and swipe? Like, all of these things are not intuitive. They are guided. They are guided based on people who think about whether or not you can see a font driving 60 miles an hour on a highway. Like, they really do think of these things. And we just, it's, you know, where's this exit? You don't think about the font. You don't think about the size. Yeah. You don't think about whether or not you can read it.
No.
Typographers have.
Yeah.
And so that's, it's a lot of nuance. It's a lot of weaving and layering very intangible things and nurturing it to something that looks visual, that sounds appealing, that experiences nicely. And that is the good, you can't see me, but that is the good design moment. Bad design is very visible. Good design is invisible.
Ooh, I like that. That's definitely something to think about as you go about your day and just live in the world, you know, as things kind of catch your eye. It's like, okay, well, why is it catching your eye and what's going on with that?
Yep. And that is something I tell my clients all the time. I will never see what you see. I will never resonate with it, even if we both love cheesecake, even if we're both like, we may not like the same type, the same flavor, the same elements about that same thing. Beautiful, wonderful, great. As long as you can communicate what it is and what about it you like, you are on your way to having a brand that is authentic and completely resonant to who you are. That's it. Point it out, talk it through, wipe it out, you're done.
There you go.
Yeah.
I also, and it kind of stems from a lot of the things that you're saying about just, it's a feeling, it's about, you know, creating something that's really unique to the individual, the business owner, and then building off of that. You say that you don't work within a certain niche. You know, you work with who the right fit is. Will you tell us just a little bit about like what that right fit means for you as a business owner?
Yeah, because I mean, there are designers who want to work with female coaches who are moms, who are 42 years old and live on a street in Saginaw, Michigan. Like, there are people who are very, very hyper niche. I started freelancing, working with business owners in the photography and wedding industry, worked with literally 1,000 of them, and was like, oh, I am good to never do this again. And because for me, it is the challenge. It is the understanding and the communication. And once I have set that person up and I understand them and they understand what they're doing, I send them on their lovely way. I'm not solving the same problem endlessly. Okay, that's not doing that. So I have worked with, like I said, thousands of photographers. I've worked with creative professionals. I've worked with tax professionals. I've worked with the German government. I've worked with 3M and Pop Sugar and Charles Schwab. I've worked with Old Navy and Elle and HSN. The truth is, the niche for me, enthusiastic, solution-oriented, curious, happy, passionate person. I don't care what we're doing. I don't care what... I don't. That's not the thing. The thing is, what are we solving? Who are we reaching? How do we want them to feel? What does that look like? And I drive almost every coach crazy because they're like, that's too broad. It's like, you don't understand the vision that I have, and that's okay.
I so love that, because in business, you are told again and again, niche down, get specific. You want to be gearing exactly who it is. But I really do think that there is something to be said about, there's just the right feeling about working with the right clients. They might not check all these other boxes, but there is something about, this is the right fit for me as a person, as a business owner. You are the right person for me to serve. And I sometimes hear from other business owners that are feeling stuck or are feeling a little overrun by their clients. And it's like, oh, no. You own the business. You choose who you work with. I get you've got to make a paycheck. You've got to put money in the bank. But you aren't being clear on who you work with then. You might have been clear, like you said, you know, okay, I work, you know, with wedding photographers. Well, maybe that's not really true. Maybe you have to be more specific about that type of person that you work with and who you're able to serve.
And I always like a blend of openness and specificity. So like, if it's creative people, if it's people who have a vision, if it's, think about the commonalities of those projects and those clients you've really cherished and those in which that were just a paycheck. Because even in the similarities, there are going to be differences. There's going to be personality quirks. There's going to be things client A, B, and D did that client R, Q, and F were like, and then you just look at that and you do assessments. That's how I restructured my entire business in 2017, because I was more traditional graphic design. You know, I did brochures and I did menus. And I just did more traditional design rather than this design thinking that lights me up beyond belief. I do it for fun. And in 2017, I let go of my team. I ended contracts that weren't fulfilling to me. And it's like, what am I really here to do? What is it that I am really here to do? And it was blend design and anthropology in a more obvious way. And enough with the pussyfooting. Enough with the, can I do this? Enough with the, does this make sense? No. Doesn't matter. It's in you. Please bring it out. Thank you very much. And that's what I've been doing.
In 2017, you had decided to restructure your business a little bit and restructure who you were serving, or being more specific, or making some changes in that way. What was it that inspired you to make those changes?
I was making $3,000 a week on projects that did not fulfill me. And I am very much the type, like, money is not the thing for me. I walked away from a $106,000 job 6 months after graduating school with $80,000 in student loans. Like, I'm not here to pay bills and die. And doing those things and having a difficult time getting to that next level where I knew I was an expert and I knew I was an innovator and I know these things. So suck it up, stop pitching on those low jobs, stop accepting those lower jobs, and start really showing what you're worth. And that's what it was for me. The organization came, The organization came when I was working with a company in Moldova for the photographers. So I needed to find a way to work with 20 clients at one time with a 2-week deadline each, which is craziness, but somehow I was able to do it because I'm a beast, while still working on my personal projects, while still having time with my then boyfriend and my cats and like exercising. And that's when organization really saved my butt. Because if it wasn't for, you know, recognizing my energy, recognizing what tasks I could do when, and recognizing when I was done for the day, I would work 18 to 22 hours a day, not even realize it, not realize that I had to pee. I actually changed the way my legs grew because I sat cross-legged in a computer chair with arms. And my husband was like, your legs look funny. I'm like, no, this is the way that they are. And he's like, I don't think that these are the way that your legs are. And he removed the arms from my chair because I subconsciously crossed my legs and there's nothing I could do about it. Like, I will wear stilettos. I will wear big clunky boots to keep my feet on the ground. That's the truth. Because it's so much more comfortable to just sit cross-legged, sink into a flow state.
That's crazy. So what was it that made you decide to work with 20 clients on a 2-week deadline?
The owner of that business was very much a snake oil salesman. He would talk really fast and get people to give them his money, and then he would be gone, and he wouldn't answer their calls, and he wouldn't be there for problems. And I am an empathetic human being, everyone. And so they would message me. They would message me, and I'm like, I'm not going to leave you. Like, I will fix this. I will fix this. I will figure this out. So within 6 months, I was the design director of this team. And the art school that I went to, their deadlines were 2 weeks. So it's like one class, you'd make a book in 2 weeks. The other class, you design a set of cards in 2 weeks. The fifth class, you design a whole font in 2 weeks. 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And, okay, the more I do, the more efficient I am. That is a truth. I am very much not a procrastinator. I am a pre-crastinator. That means I do things too early because I'm stupid excited. And sometimes I've done it wrong because I didn't get all the information. So I have to, like, sit on my hands and chill out. But he took advantage of that. He really did. And I don't like to let people down, and so I would wake up at 7 in the morning, check on the team when they left, because Moldova is like 7 hours ahead, and work until 2 a.m., where I would greet them for their day and be like, hey, here's what you have to do for your day. I will see you in 5 hours. Wake up, do it again. And I got fired. I got fired, everyone, for asking for a raise. You want to know how much money I made from that? $28,000 a year. $28,000 a year. And I got fired for asking for a raise. And that's when I said, you know what I'm going to do? Pure fantastico now. I finally have the chutzpah to do this. And that's what I started.
It's wild how things like that can just, I don't know how you're feeling about it in the moment, but when you look back and you're like, oh, thank you. Oh, thank you so much for that, because that's exactly what I needed. Thank you for screwing me over. Thank you for putting me through that.
I always need to be kicked out because I am such a dedicated, solution-oriented, stubborn person. I very much have to be like, Jenny, no. It's like, okay. And I'll just sit there for a while and not realize that it's a blessing. Not realize that it's a saving grace. But I'll be like, but I could have tried harder. but I could for real. And it wasn't until I realized that that attitude is a positive attitude if used in the right way, which is towards yourself. Towards yourself. Because you can't try too hard to succeed as yourself. You can't. You just wake up and you open your mouth and boop, there it is. Okay, hi self. And that's the truth. And anybody that is like, you know, oh, I don't like that. Or, oh, you're too much. You're not enough. It's been such a different like shift in me with that. It's like, no, I'm awesome. I'm like into this right now. So that's cool. Change the channel. For real.
Yes. Once you kind of come into that, it's just
the best addiction
ever. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's so unforgiving of just like, oh no. I'm not to say that you're not learning and growing and continuing to do things, but like you were not changing or wanting to change the core of your being. It's like, this is exactly who I am. I don't waste energy or time or thoughts on it. This is who I am. This is how I present in the world. Moving on. You know, yep. I'm going to take all that energy that I might have been using otherwise to change or fit or adjust. And nope, I'm going to do all these other things with that.
Yes. Who has the time? I don't. And the time I have, I don't want to spend it that way. Like I get I'm so grateful for my husband who is way more practical and grounded and like is willing to do the hard things. I'm like, excuse me, my life is made up of limited moments. They do not include taxes. And so he's like, okay, babe, you'll just sit there and listen to your music and I'll handle this. I'm like, I love that. Yes, thank you. Because there are things he does not like to do that I'm very happy to do. You know, I call myself a joy coordinator because I'm like, nope, we need randomness. This light turning on means we talk nothing but romance. And he's like, okay, babe. And I just go for it. But that's the balance. The balance is I bring the silly and the fun and the levity. Mm-hmm. And he brings the grounded, and then he feels free to be fun. And I'm like, maybe we should be a little practical. And that's when his head explodes, because most moments rarely happen. So
such a beautiful insight into your partnership right there.
Well, and he really helped me with the structure and the organization. When I met him, he was in Iraq. He did 2 tours in Iraq, and I met him on the internet. And for me, that was perfect, because I work all the time. And when he moved in with me, he was like, you spend way too long on one client. This is never going to work. So what we're going to do is we're going to set some timers. And when you feel distracted or when you feel irritated, you hit pause and you put the time down. You put the time down. And then we're going to see how long you can work on certain things. And we could see how frustrated you get. We could see how tired you get.
Ooh.
And I'm like, okay, this magical observation you are bringing to my life. And it showed me how to organize my day for maximum efficiency, which is everything this type A self needed. And I've been working in this way since 2009. So for me, writing is first, concepting is first, anything that's like really heavy mental load. First in the morning, so between 3 and 7 a.m. And then there is creative directing and art directing, which is creative directing is the larger vision. It includes the visuals, it includes the strategy, it includes the verbs, it includes everything. It is the larger vision. Art direction is just the visuals. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What are these pieces? Lunch. Then we go to design, which is the implementation, the execution of the ideas within the art direction, within the creative direction. Then I do emails. Then I do social media stuff. Then I write my to-do list. Then I eat dinner. And the amount of things I can get done are like just immense because it's 30-minute chunks, it's 60-minute chunks, it's 90-minute chunks. And then I know myself, I know when I'm getting irritated, I know when I need to push, I know when I need to let go, because I'm aware.
How long did it take after your husband had pointed out, like, hey, let's track this, let's track when you're getting frustrated, how long did it take you to find all of those rhythms in your day?
Well, here's the truth. While that sounds very appealing, you all need to know that it shifts. With 2020, with my period, with moving, it's like, oh, this doesn't work anymore. Oh, crap, that doesn't work anymore. And so then I have to regroup and forgive myself because I am very much the person who loves to maximize this time on Earth. Can I be productive? Can I produce something? Can I make something? Can I? That's just me. It took me, I would say, 3 years to train myself to see relaxing as doing something. Relaxing is doing something. And it's really challenging for me not to reach for my phone and have my notes app and blog about a commercial or an idea I had for a course. Like, it's just forever. So I would say maybe like 2 months before it became really standard. And then we moved to California and my perfectly beautiful schedule was like, guess what? No. But what happened was because I was so used to throwing everything up in the air and letting it land where it was, when we lived in California, I was able to train myself to wake up at 3 a.m. because we lived in Hollywood across the street from where they filmed the Oscars. It was not on purpose, but sometimes life is funny. And we lived with a lot of college kids. Like, not in our place, but, like, in our building. And so they would party until 2:45 in the morning. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna wake up when you go to bed. I will wake up when you go to bed. And so I woke up at 3 a.m. And then I would, you know, like, do my schedule. I would write. I would do all of those things. I would be done by 4 p.m. I would cook dinner. I would clean. I would wake up at 3 a.m. So now I sleep in until 7:30.
I love that sleeping in.
It's like, oh man, I got some rest because I'm so used to waking up at 4. And now I don't have to. Mm-hmm. Now I don't have to. Now that part of the project is done and I don't have those things. So it's like, well, I could get up or I could rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I think that that's to say that you were able to be flexible and to forgive yourself when your lifestyle had changed, also acknowledging that there's, you know, things in our life, whether it's stress, our period, whatever, like there's other things in our life that kind of throw our routine out of whack or it'll, yeah, it might change our rhythms where, you know, you're a little bit more tired or a little bit more irritable or it's just you aren't able to stay in that flow state.
So let me share with you my solution there. It is called routine templates. You can actually have, I hate routine. This is something you all need to know. I need structure and I have come to appreciate routine, but after a while I resent the routine like nobody's business. And so I'm very much the spontaneous, like, who needs a map? I'll just turn right and left. Who cares? Like, I'm very much that person. But that does not build efficiency. That does not make things happen on a regular basis. And I accept that. So routine templates are routines that you have instituted that you can cycle through depending on where you're at. So I totally have a routine for period time. I totally have a routine for this client was crappy and I needed to heal myself, but I also still have other work to do. What do I do about it? I mean, I did not have a we're in a pandemic and things are really stressful with the politics routine. That's a new one that I had to shift, but it involved a lot of movies and a little bit of illustration. But that's the truth. And so what would be beneficial for those who are listening is to try. And what I do is I write my to-do list. And when I'm in a space where I'm crappy or I just had a fight or I heard something upsetting, I reset, I watch something, I listen to something, I dance, I do yoga, I go for a walk. And then I go through my list. And with it, I try for like 15 minutes per task. If something is not great within 15 minutes, I'm like, all right, not for me. And I cycle through the next task. And that's how I found that I write in the beginning and I design at the middle because I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try one, cycle through like a deck of cards, and I will find the thing that works for me right now. And if none of them work, I take my butt to bed and I put on a Disney movie and maybe I have some hot cocoa. That's the truth. I mean, because it is me. I am here and I have to love myself.
It is so important that, one, you've identified the things that you can do. You talked about doing yoga, going for a walk, dancing, putting on a Disney movie, that there's things that you know they can kind of like bump you, boost you, get you to maybe where you want to be. And that alone takes so much insight and practice to just know what those things are. So that's awesome. But the fact too that you're saying that you look at your to-do list and you're like, okay, I put 15 minutes into it. And you don't then say, oh, I'm just not good at this. I can't, you know what? You don't get all that negative stuff. You're like, hold on, this isn't the right time to do this. Moving on. Okay. And you just find, oh, hold on. Actually, I can really get into taking care of these administrative tasks right now, or I can really get into a flow state of writing. And I just don't think that people are forgiving enough with themselves sometimes that they just look at their to-do list. And it might not even be ordered in any sort of order. It's just what fell out of their mind of like, okay, this is what's on today. And you're not really thinking about like, where am I in my day? Where am I in my schedule and my routines to really maximize getting through this list?
Well, there was I would say in 2011, I remember it so clear. You know, you all have these moments, but it's like I'm driving in the car and I'm listening to this wonderful DJ crying. I'm crying because aside from my work, I couldn't think of things I liked to do. I love designing. I love creating. I love illustrating. It was like an easy sell for me to do that for my living. But like, what do you like to do for fun? Work. Yeah. Work fun. Work is fun. Fun work. Work fun. And that's not a healthy place to be. So then it was, well, I better figure this out real quick. And so it was sort of like supermarket sweep, but things you could try. Things you might like. Things, I don't know. And so I just like shoved it all in my life and in my cart and tried it. I love running. You know how I know I love running? Because I hated watching Breaking Bad and it was really stressful. And to deal with the stress, I found myself running in place, yelling at Bryan Cranston, just yelling at him. And I'm like, oh, I love running. Ooh, that is very much me as a person. I don't enjoy not knowing the answer. And I will go for silly before, you know, judgment, self-judgment, because I grew up in a family with a lot of judgment. I got in trouble a lot for laughing as a kid because I couldn't stop being silly and goofy. And in my adult life, my husband really appreciates the silly goofy. So sometimes I'll just put a shoe on my head. And then he'll look at me and he'll put something random on his head. And before you know it, we are stacking things on our heads, crying, laughing. And that's the game. That's the game. That's who chooses dinner tomorrow. Like, that's how do you decide that? You don't. You get to a place where you are like, this is who I am. Come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. I at least like this. The end. Doesn't matter if it's branding, doesn't matter if it's music, doesn't matter if it's putting shit on your head. If it brings you joy, it is worth pursuing, it is worth keeping. And as you cultivate what I call an arsenal of coping mechanisms, you will learn what songs bring you joy. You will learn what stories, what movies help reconnect you with who you are. The trick is just keeping them in your mind and pulling them forth without embarrassment or judgment. That's so much in my life, guys. No embarrassment, no judgment.
It's not easy to arrive there, but I will say that once you're there, oh, damn, does it feel good.
I was born there. It took me
growing up. Were you?
Yeah. Okay. It took me growing up and being like, this has always been me, everyone. My mom would be so embarrassed. Like, about me, for me, and I'm like, no, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Like marching in, like I just don't have it. I don't have shame. And whether that's standing up to my grandfather because he brought a toy for my brother and not for me, and I'm like 18 months being like, that's not nice, Pachi. two kids live in this house. Like, that's me. That's me. And we were talking before, I don't do well in situations where I feel like an alien. And it's happened, okay? Like, I recognize this is not the normal average stance for a human to take, but I don't care. This is whatever. This is who I am. But if I'm in a situation and it's like I'm being judged or there's that air of like, I turn it on them so fast where it's like, you, I'm cooler than you. I love this. And make something silly and do a silly dance and bloop, 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 my merry way, because it's not important for me. That person's judgment, that person's projection, they don't like themselves. They don't like themselves. So why am I going to join them and being like, you're right. I also do not like myself now. Hell no. Hell no. I feel bad for them. I feel bad for them. And I am that girl that tells men to smile. Straight up, hardcore. Be like, hey, dude, smile on your face. Hey. And then they usually do. And before COVID, I'd be like, up top, high five, and just walk on.
I love it all. I can't wait to meet you in real life someday. And we can just like prance about just
yes,
being silly.
And come and with strangers just... and tell them how grateful I am that they wore that shade of color or how wonderful it is that they chose that dress. I mean, I have yelled at, in like a loving way, everyone, I have yelled at women in the gas station and clapped and being like, thank you for blessing us all with this presence of this outfit. Thank you so much. Because you don't know if she had that time where she's like, is this too much? Should I wear this? Do I look fat? Hell no, queen, celebrate and sparkle. Like, I made this thing. I call them break in case of boring bags. And they are seriously bags of glitter and sequins that I break open. I sprinkle because if something is stressful, if something, this came because of Trump supporters. And I needed a way to like diffuse the anger and diffuse the frustration in like a silly, pretty way. And glitter is the answer. Glitter was my answer. And so now I just leave them all over town. Because it's like everybody has those moments where glitter is just a little bit necessary.
I am going to, from here on out, just refer to you as like the Chancellor of Joy, because that's all that I'm hearing. It's just like, this along with the work that you do, I think that that's really just the essence of who you are and what you bring.
It's true. And if you knew the roughness of where I came from, the flowers of this joy were definitely sown in the manure of conflict. And coming out the other side being like, well, this is the life I was given. This is the self that I am. Like I always say, I'd like to be my full Jenny self. Because I don't know who I was before I was Jenny, but I know that this is Jenny now. And I'm going to be the loudest, most wonderful Jenny that I can be, to the chagrin of my mother, who is very negative, and my brother, who is very negative. It's my life. This is my life. And that's it. And so when that happens, you can take two routes. You can hate yourself. And you can say, why me? This was so hard. I wish I didn't have to go through that. Or you could say, you know what? I went through that and I'm still here. I am still here. I still exist. And maybe I have to work on pieces and maybe there are pieces that are missing that I have to go find. But that's fun. That's a scavenger hunt of joy. That's a scavenger hunt of the self. And that's the truth. And in that space, it's exploratory, it's endless possibilities. And at the end of it, you get to be you, which is wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining me today and for being your full, wonderful, most Jenny self. Sharing with us your journey and your business. And I am just so grateful to this conversation. And I want to find, you know, all these glitter bags around town and infuse some more joy into my life and my community. You've definitely inspired me.
Thank you. I will send you some because I use them as my marketing. Yeah, I just have a business card. It's like I'm sitting at home shoving bags with glitter. Okay. Like it's a joyous time.
That's amazing. And I love how clever that is.
And it honestly just came because Okay. I got into a fight with a man at a Walmart in rural Florida.
Okay. Go on. Okay.
So I'm very tired of mediocre white men. I apologize if you are a mediocre white man out there listening, but I am sick of you. And he was there in a Trump shirt, wandering around the aisles in like the self-checkout line. And the lack of awareness at that point was too much for me to handle. And he said, "Excuse me." And I said, "There is no excuse for you." And I walked on by to do my groceries, and my poor husband had to be like, "It's fine. It's fine. Sir, go away. She didn't mean it, sir. And he had to like navigate that. And he's like, "That is the most white trash thing that's ever happened, Jennifer Nicole." And I'm like, "I get that. I'm sorry. I could not say anything. And that's why I did Break in Case of Boring. Because I really just wanted to, like, at that moment, be like, "Be gone!" And when you do that with glitter and sequins, it's like a lot easier.
Oh, hot damn. That man did not know what's coming.
Yeah, because shit gets really boring and the best solution is glitter. I have a client who is a colorectal surgeon and he was like, "You can eat glitter. It's healthy for you." I'm like, "Yeah.
I've got questions. I don't think I want to be the first guinea pig, but you let me know how that."
My insides need to be as sparkly as my outsides. Okay. I am a grown woman. Yeah, it's true. And people cannot age me. And I love it. Okay. My vanity is peak form. Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you for this.
Well, seriously, thank you again. Of course. I've loved our conversation. And I definitely look forward to hopefully having a chance to chat with you again in the future.
Yes. Let's be friends, please.
Thanks for joining us today on the Executive Order Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you're really enjoying the show, leave me a review. If you want to connect with the podcast on Instagram or Twitter, you can find it at Executive Order Podcast. And if you want more information or to connect with me about organizing, you can find me at zenniaorganizers.com. All links in the show notes. Can't wait to chat with you in the next episode.